Committee of the Joint Committee on Ways and Means, and we're here today to do a public hearing and work session on Senate Bill 5516, which is the DEQ authorizing certain fee establishments and increases bill. We're going to start out with the public hearing portion of the program, and to review Senate Bill 5516, Ken Rocco from the Legislative Fiscal Office.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, I've provided you with some materials related to this bill that I wanted to review with you first. They're clipped together. The first set is a memo from LFO with a summary of the bill and the recommendations that are included in it. Also,
which you are now holding up, Mr. Rocco.
This one, yes. Correct. And attached to that are two. After the memo, there are two sets of materials that have a fiscal impact on the front. And these are to represent two possible options, or at least two of that can be worked from for amending the bill. The first one are amendments that are needed. They're more in the line of technical amendments that are needed because of omissions in the original bill. The second, which are labeled as dash two, would be based on LFO's recommendation that go a little bit beyond the dash one amendments. They include all of the dash one amendments, but go a little bit beyond that. And when we get into work session, I'll describe those to you. The second item that is provided is a single sheet, which is a an email that was received from Mr. William Carey, who wanted this included in the record on this bill. That's attached for all committee members. And then the final set of materials that are clipped together, which include a table on the cover. These are some background materials on one of the fee increases that the committee will be discussing, on the Water Quality Division's on-site program. And there's several items in there, including a package from the last biennium's budget, a progress report on how the program has accomplished its functions over the last 2 years. If you want to look at the cover memo that is provided on the summary, this is, again, as you did yesterday in the Department of, for the Department of Agriculture, this is a bill that is required to ratify fee increases that were administratively either established or increased during the last interim. The bill has primarily four sections of fee increases in it. Section one has a fee that was established in the Water Quality Division for holding tanks as part of the Water Pollution Control Facility Permit. And this is a $25 fee that is was established to allow individuals to self-certify. If an individual does not self-certify and the department needs to go out and certify the holding tank, there's a $200 fee. So this was a fee established to help individuals out. The second set of fee increases are for the Air Quality Division. This is in Section 2, Subsection 1. Under statutory law, the department is allowed to increase Title V fees by the Consumer Price Index. And for the last 2 years, in 99 and 2000, these Title V fees were increased by 1.62% in 99 and by 2.2% in the year 2000.
Representative Hayden.
The Consumer Price Index being what index, Mr. Rocco?
I'm not sure, Representative Hayden. It's probably the It might be the Portland CPI or the U.S. average for all urban consumers, but I can check on that to make sure for you.
Thank you.
We also wanted to point out that in number three, that included in the section two, subsection one fee increases are two air contaminant discharge permit fees that overlap with Title V. But we also wanted to point out that the agency is currently going through a process as part of their permit streamlining procedure that they discussed during testimony on their budget, of collapsing the 75 existing permits into seven. And these changes are not reflected in this bill, but in case you hear of the commission taking action on these kinds of changes, we thought it would be useful to point out to you that these changes will be reflected in a similar bill to this in the next assembly, because these are going through the rulemaking process now. And these changes are not going to take effect until after July 1st, 2001. And the same would go for any other fee increases that the legislature authorizes during this session in the agency's budget. Under number four, in section two, subsection two of the Senate Bill 5516, there are fee increases in the Water Quality Division's on-site program. And these fee increases were authorized by the 99 legislative session in conjunction with the program option package, and that's the package that's been provided to you in the other set of materials given to the subcommittee. This fee increase was proposed to in order for the on-site program to continue some existing positions that were in danger of being lost due to revenue shortfalls, and to provide some additional services with 4.5 new FTE. These fees were discussed to increase by approximately 35%, and then as actually adopted by the Environmental Quality Commission, they were ultimately increased by an average of about 38%. The reason for the change was to generate enough revenue to cover cost of living adjustments for the staff in that program, since the program is 100% funded by fees. And the agency, during Ways and Means testimony in 99, the agency discussed the fact that the fee level they were anticipating would allow them to continue the program without another fee increase for somewhere between 3 to 5 years. Finally, section under number five, section two, subsection 14, represents a heating oil program fee increase that was included in this bill but should not have been, and that proposed fee increase is now included in House Bill 2883, which is has been introduced and may even be in Ways and Means by now.
Questions or comments for Mr. Rocco?
Madam Chair, I think the LFO recommendations for this are in the next couple of pages. I have included all of the changes that would have to be made under two different versions of changes to the bill. Our recommendation is to, in section one, the holding tank permit fee, to approve that, and including some I'm sorry, there's no actual change to that language now. We had a last minute adjustment to this recommendation, so it would just to be approved on the fee as indicated in the bill.
Okay, so there is no recommended language change.
There are no changes at this point.
Okay.
In section two, subsection one, which is the Air Quality Division, we again would recommend approving those fee increases, but there are some attached language changes, which are identified down at the bottom in under LFO recommended changes proposed by department in section A, or number A,
okay.
Letter A. And again, these are technical types of changes that have to be adjusted to make the bill work. For the Water Quality Division, our recommendation is that the fees in that program that were increased by more than what was presented to the 99 Legislative Assembly be returned to the level that had been presented to the legislature. And there's a fee schedule attached to this memo at the very back, which shows what the fees were prior to being increased, what the fees were estimated in the, during the 99 session to the legislature, and what the actual fee was when it was implemented by the Environmental Quality Commission in February of 2000. And in this case, there are two types of changes. The first set of changes, which are under the list of proposed by the department, show all of the changes that are needed on a technical basis. And then if you go back to the page number 4, you can see additional changes that would reflect the reduction of the fee back to the proposed amount. And then finally, in section LFO recommends that section 2, subsection 14, which is the heating oil tank fee, that we recommend that fee be eliminated from this bill since it's already included in that other House bill.
Okay.
And if you look at the two sets of attachments to that top memo, there's a fiscal impact on the dash ones and then a hand engrossed bill that goes behind it that shows where all of these changes would be made. And again, these are changes supported by the department as technical adjustments to the bill. The second set, which is listed as dash two amendments, shows that all of the changes included in the dash one, along with the fee changes that are on pages 2, 3, 4, and 5 of that hand engrossed bill. These changes would result in a reduction of about $368,000 in revenue to the department in the 2001-03 biennium, and would result in the elimination of three positions that could no longer be supported. However, we have learned from the department that they currently have five positions that are vacant that they have not filled that were authorized by the 1999 legislature in that program option package that we mentioned. And those positions have not been filled as of this time. So that's, Madam Chair, a summary of the bill and LFO's recommendations on the bill.
Very good. Any questions or comments on LFO's recommendations? Representative Clark.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In regards to, Ken, your just previously aforementioned comment, the five positions unfilled, how long were they unfilled and what happened to the money that we appropriated to them?
Madam Chair, I think the department would like to give some background on this. And could respond to that better than I could, Representative Krupp. But it's my understanding those positions were approved by the 99 legislature as part of the package that was to be implemented with the fee increase. They have not been filled since that time. They were authorized and not filled. Part of the reason for that is due to the timing of receipt of revenue from the fee increase. But I think the department should really respond to your question.
this would be, I think, a good opportunity to call Stephanie Halleck, the DEQ director, forward, and any of the staff members that you'd like to come with you.
Madam Chair, I think if I may have just be me for the time being, unless I need some help.
Welcome.
Thank you. For the record, I'm Stephanie Halleck, the Director of the Department of Environmental Quality, and the handout that I'm providing, I hope you'll bear with me when I walk you through it as quickly as I can, because I have a lot of history on this issue, and I sat down yesterday evening and this morning and put it down so that I could be very clear with you about the progression of events. Last session, I was in a special assignment, as I was not the DEQ administrator, as you know, or a director. I was in a special assignment managing this program. And one of the things that I did is I carried Senate Bill 335, which was to implement process improvements in the program, and I also carried this fee increase request. So I have a history here with the program, and I think I probably know more about how all this played out than anybody. So I'd like to go through it with you quickly, if I may. First of all, on the fee history, at the end of 1998, the department had a rule package ready to go to increase the fees in this program. This is entirely a fee-funded program. There is no federal fund, and there's no general fund. There had been a little bit of general fund subsidy, and the department made a policy decision that they weren't going to provide any more general fund subsidy because we were short on general fund and water. The rule package was ready to go at the end of 98. DAS, Department of Administrative Services, advised the department that since session was about to start, we should not adopt those fees by rule, and we should come to the legislature for approval of them. And we did that in 1999, and Representative Morgan was a part of that committee. I don't know that anybody else in the committee
today. Senator Farioli was.
Senator Farioli was as well. And the 1999 legislature did, in fact, approve a fee increase that was it would have been a 35% fee increase. And with the fee increase in place, we would have funded 29.5 FTE in the program. And that would include five existing positions that would have been unfunded without the fee increase, an additional 4.5 new FTE. And I testified at that time in front of the committee that we hoped that the fees that we were adopt, if the legislature approved the fees, that we wouldn't have to ask for another increase in that program. I believe it was Representative Morgan who asked me the question, and that we hoped we wouldn't have to come back for roughly 5 years or a couple of biennia. I answered that would cover it for us. As Mr. Rocco mentioned, all the positions were proposed in the package as 24-month positions, and the intent was to adopt the fees by rule just as soon as the legislative session ended, if they were approved by legislature, to be effective October of 1999. The 99 session did not end until early July, and about the same time as the session ended, the state settled a contract negotiation that would result in approximately a 3% pay raise for all state employees. And those pay raises had not been factored into the fee schedule that I had been discussing with the legislature and the inflation factors that we had included in that fee schedule. Because the session ran into July, and because therefore our budget was adopted late, we were not able to complete a public process for rulemaking to get to the Environmental Quality Commission by September in order to have the fees be implemented in October. We also wanted to, because we do all our fee making with stakeholder input, we also wanted to reconvene our fee holder stakeholders to discuss the salary increases and what to do about integrating those into the fee schedule. We were concerned that if we didn't address the salary increases right then before adopting the fees by rule, that we would not be able to make our commitment to not come back for 5 years, because we would have had to come back to accommodate those a couple of years later. We did convene the Stakeholder Advisory Committee, and they reviewed the proposal, and they had mixed support for the increase. Generally, there was one, Jerry, just went blank on his name, the realtor lobbyist.
Schmidt.
thank you, Jerry Schmidt, was opposed to them across the board. Others were okay with some and didn't want others, so it was generally mixed, but we did have a dialogue with the stakeholders. I was not personally involved in that. After I had carried the legislation, I went back to my job in Eastern Region, but I was involved long distance with the rulemaking, so I was in touch with staff as this was going on. But in preparation for this meeting, I did go back and review all the files and all my old files and all the emails and everything else that had gone on during that time period. And I know that we did have some conversation with DAS and with LFO during that time period about what was going on and the fact we had an advisory committee and that sort of thing. We did not have any contact directly with any of the committee members or anybody on the in the legislature during that summer time period. The upshot of that was that we did amend the fee schedule to be more than was discussed during session, and that was to accommodate the salary increases, and that was adopted by the commission in November of 1999 with an effective date of February 1st, 2000. The reason that we had it not effective till February 1st, 2000 is that we wanted to allow time to notify the stakeholders, to notify the members of the legislature who had been interested in this issue, the counties who administer some of the on-site program on our behalf. And we did send a letter and a copy of the rules to members of the legislature in December of 1999 advising what had been going on and why. We did not take any of this to the e-board because our understanding with the Department of Administrative Services was that they were going to e-board on behalf of all the agencies to deal with getting the limitation to cover the salary increases. So that's why we didn't go to e-board. So that's kind of how that played out after the session was over till the fees were adopted. Now I want to talk a little bit about the rationale behind the fee structure. The shorthand explanation that has been given is that we had discussed a 35% increase with the legislature, and the increase was actually 38%. I would like to clarify exactly what fees were adopted and why, and be happy to answer your questions about that. Basically, there are three types of fees in the on-site sewage program. One type of fee is for direct services. That's for site evaluations, issuing permits, direct services to the people who have systems. The second is a surcharge for the state oversight of the county programs. We have it, as I said, delegated to some counties who want to run the program. And the third is fees that are assessed for licenses for the pumpers and installers, the people who work in the business. In the fee schedule, you have it, I think, in your packet, there are 21 direct service activities for which fees are assessed. The fees adopted for those activities by the Environmental Quality Commission in November increased for 15 of those 21 from what was discussed with the legislature in 99. The increases ranged anywhere from $5 per fee more to $75 per fee more than what was discussed. There was no change in four of the direct service fees. One of the direct service fees was actually adopted lower by the commission than what had been discussed with the legislature. And one of the direct service fees for variances had not been discussed with the legislature at all, except in the context of passing Senate Bill 335, which would allow us to set the fee by rule. And I need to explain that a little bit more, because in one of LFO's recommendations, which is to roll that one back from $1,300 to $225. I want to make it very clear that at the time that it appeared on the schedule at $225, we did not have authority to change it. And that's why we were not discussing it formally with this group on the fee schedule. Senate Bill 335 took the $225 out of statute, and when I gave testimony on Senate Bill 335, I talked about what that would mean and what it really cost the department to do a variance, which it's in here is $1,300. It costs roughly 13.5 hours for a standard to do a standard variance, and then it's more if there's a denial or appeal or whatever. So the reason it was in there is $225. Is it was set by statute, and we really didn't have a conversation about it in the context of this particular issue. So I wanted to clarify that. what I did then in 1995, and it's in your materials, is in the fact sheets that we handed out, is the example that I used is I said that under the fees we were discussing with the legislature last session is that it would cost a homeowner installing a standard system $1,135 in fees. When the fee schedule was adopted by the commission in November of 99, that cost went from $1,135 up to $1,195, so it increased by $60. That was the net result of the change that the commission made. The second type of fee, that's what happened with the direct service fees. The second type of fee is the county oversight fee. That was proposed at $40. It did not change when the commission went on to adopt the rule. It stayed at $40. The most dramatic difference between the fees that were discussed with the legislature and the fees which were ultimately adopted by rule were for the licenses for the pumpers and installers. The fee for a new license had been discussed as $425 for a new license, and it was adopted at $800. The fee for a renewal had been discussed at $320, and it was adopted as $400. Now, some of those charts that were handed out had different numbers in there, and from a typographical error, is that something that I need to clarify for them, or point them to it, or are we okay?
Madam Chair, if you want to, there's two charts in your materials. One is on the back of the memo that I provided you, and the other is on the first sheet of this background materials. And they are very similar looking. And there is an error on these charts. If you go down to the, if you look at the one that has, it's attached to the memo. If you go down to near the bottom where it has SDS licenses, and if you go over to the second column where you see $300 for a new business, that should really be $425. That's what was discussed with the committee. And under SDS licenses, renewal of valid license, it says $200. That should be $320. And that's what Ms. Halleck was just referring to. And in the proposed amendments to the bill, these are correct. They're not. And the same goes for this sheet that's provided from the department. It's the same number, except it's in the first column this time.
Thank you, Mr. Rocco. So those obviously are the most dramatic increases. All of those fees were discussed with the advisory committee, as I said. The reasoning on why the licensing fees were proposed to be so much higher is that both the committee and DEQ in those discussions wanted to minimize any increase in fees to the individual homeowner, the $60 example that I just gave you a minute ago. The higher license, this is an important thing for you to know. I mentioned that we had developed a rule package in 1998, that we had gone through stakeholder review, we had a fee schedule in it. Those higher fees were already in that rule package in 1998. They had been discussed with stakeholders, and they had gone out on public comment. And so the committee, when revisiting that issue, as I said, the committee was split, but the conversation there was they were more comfortable with increases in licensing fees than they were with increases in fees that would affect individual homeowners. And that was the rationale, right or wrong, for why the licensing fees went up as much as they did. The support, by the way, that we had in industry, and by the way, that's not universal, as you can tell from the email that Mr. Rocco provided in your packet from one of the licensees objecting to the fees, but from the folks who were represented on our advisory committee and from the public, some of the public comment we got when we went out, there was some support for those for the purpose of DEQ doing more compliance and enforcement on the bad guys, if you will, the folks who do illegal dumping of septage and anybody who's operating illegally in the business. And there has been some feeling in the past that we've not been tough enough and not used our resources to find those folks. So there was some support for us to have a program to do that. Finally, with regard to the positions and the service provided and the work, et cetera, As I said, the fees in this program fund a total of 29.5 FTE, and the increase funds five existing positions and 4.5 new FTE. There are no federal or general funds. We requested that all the positions be 24 months. In reality, as Mr. Rocco said, because the budget was not approved till late in session, and therefore all the rulemaking was delayed to adopt the fees, and the fees didn't take effect until February of 2000, the revenue to coming in to support those positions wasn't there until quite some time afterwards. As a result of that, we were very conservative about hiring over concern about the revenue. I mean, one of the reasons we were in this fix in the first place is that the revenue simply had not kept up with what we needed to fund in the program, and we didn't want to go back there again. So we made a decision in the program that we would not rush to fill positions until we were sure that we were going to get the revenue. We did quickly begin the service improvements with three of the five that were existing but unfunded. When the fee increase was approved, we did immediately begin to do service improvements, reinstitute the service in Baker City and Warrenton and Grants Pass, our little offices, with our three NRS3 positions. And we also began work on rules for new technologies with the existing NRS4 position we had. So we didn't just sit there and wait. We did work with some of the existing positions. We did not fill the three NRS4 positions to do the compliance work because we wanted to see whether the licensing activity levels would generate the revenue that we had projected. It has, and we do plan to fill those positions. During the busy season, we did expend some of the revenue that came in because we were able to hire a retired on-site guy to work for us on a temporary basis to pick up some of the work during the busy season. And on the OS2 position, we did not start recruiting for that position until recently because it has taken longer than anticipated to get the certification program going that we had hoped to establish this biennium. Finally, the half an FTE, I think it's listed on some of that material as an environmental law special. That's not correct. It was a soil scientist, and I think that's been corrected in Mr. Rocco's materials as well. The reason that we didn't use that half a position is the person is there, but half of his job is covered by federal funds because he's working on the Lapine demonstration project as a soil scientist. So the net result of all of that is I want to assure the committee, and particularly Representative Morgan, who was here before, that there was no desire on the part of this department to pull a fast one on anybody. We had what we felt were very legitimate concerns to address after we got out of session about not putting ourselves back in this position of being underfunded yet again and trying to manage our positions and our money conservatively as we went forward. And I would be happy, I'll stop there, I'd be happy to answer questions. I can answer questions about some of the service commitments that we made and whether we've been able to fulfill those or not and what we would fulfill or wouldn't fulfill if these fees are rolled back. But I at least wanted you to have an understanding of what happened since a lot of you weren't here.
Questions or comments? Representative Krupp.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So that's a very good explanation, by the way, and good history for those of us who didn't sit on the committee and were not part of that process. So the fee increase, which the revenue didn't start flowing into DEQ until the spring of 2000, that fee increase was enough to fund all of the positions that you had intended it to fund, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So, Madam Chair, if I may?
Yes.
So there was enough money there, but you chose for obviously good reasons to not fill those positions. What'd you do with the money?
Madam Chair, Representative Krupp, let me be clear about how the money works, and I may ask Helen to come up and help me out. But the revenue that I referred to as starting to flow in the spring was the higher level revenue.
There had been revenue from the start of the biennium until the higher levels started coming in at the old levels, so that there was revenue coming in so we could pay for services in the program. And the revenue started coming in the spring. At this point, if this is getting to your question, there will be the hiring, the OS2 is being recruited for right now, and recruitments will start on the other ones now that we know the revenue's there. There's anticipated to be, if nothing changed right now, and Helen can nod her head or come up here and correct me if I'm wrong, there will be an ending balance of about $350,000. But coming into the new biennium, if we now proceed and get the positions all filled, that revenue will be used up. I mean, if we get fully staffed, we are not collecting more, we will not be collecting more revenue prospectively than we need to fund the 29.5 and have some kind of an ending balance at the end of each biennium. The problem is we're slower getting there. I mean, the whole thing is slower than we would have wanted it to be. We would have liked to have started as close to July 1 of 99 as we can, but we're way late. So what you end up with is more ending balance, but ultimately you use it.
Okay, so if I'm understanding you correctly, the money started flowing in at the higher rate.
Right.
Okay, in the spring of 2000. These positions were unfilled positions. Were these previously unfilled positions, or were these positions that you were going to fill because you had a fee increase?
Some of them were positions we were going to, 4.5 of them were positions that we were going to fill because we had a fee increase. Five of them were existing positions that we already had in our budget. In our base budget, we just didn't have revenue to pay for them. We would, if we hadn't gotten the fee increase, we would have had to move the people out of the program or let them go or whatever.
So then, Madam Chair, and it looks like I see really four positions here, four and a half, that were unfilled. The three NRS 4 positions, the OS2 position, because of the obvious reasons. Those were all new positions, or were some of those positions that had been
I think one of the NRS 4s was had been vacant, and two of them were new, and the OS and two of the NRS 4s were new, and the OS2 was new.
Okay, so last question is it appears that from what you were saying that money started flowing in, you didn't hire the people, the money's still in the agency, you haven't spent it for something else, it's just going into your ending balance basically, and will be there for you to obviously draw upon for those purposes. So you didn't spend it somewhere else on something else. It's the money's there that came in from the unfilled positions.
Representative Krupp, that's absolutely correct. Okay. This is a dedicated fee-supported program. It cannot be used for anything else.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Hayden.
Well, I just wanted to confirm what I think you said and restate what should be obvious to everybody. Concerning increasing fees to individual homeowners or to licensees?
Installers and pumpers who have licenses, Representative Hayden.
You said you did not want to increase the fees to individual homeowners. You would still increase the fees to the licensors. Now, I think it's just obvious that you're just subrogating the fee increases to the license holders who then pass it on to the homeowners. There's no saving to the homeowner in this situation, is there, ultimately?
Representative Hayden, ultimately that's correct.
I thought perhaps we had stumbled on a way of providing free houses to people. Charge high licensing fees and no homeowner fees and move in.
Here's where can I sign up?
Yeah. I'm not mocking. It's a thing that bothers me a lot is the embedded regulatory fees that we all pay, and they're hidden, and there's really no way to get a handle on them, and people just pay them and pay them and pay them, and they don't even know it. And no way to deal with it that I know of.
Lieutenant Hayden, I can assure you that the people who pay these fees know it.
Okay.
Yeah.
There should be pain.
Yeah. Representative Nolan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. 2 points. I wanted to make sure that in the brief exchange between Representative Krupp and the director that we got the horse before the cart, specifically that because of the expansion of service, which would be provided by new employees, we raised the fees. We didn't raise the fees and then decide to go hire people to spend the money. And I think that's what you meant, but the way you said it was something about we hired the people because we raised the fees, and I think we do it the other way around. We need the additional service, and therefore we raise the fees. But my question is, you also had an exchange about ending fund balance and where those revenues went. It's my understanding that given that you were trying to achieve a fee that could stay in place for 5 years, the ending fund balance in any given fiscal year is in fact not an accident, but a design in your fee setting procedure. We need to have an ending fund balance in the first 4 years of that five-year period, because as costs go up and the fees don't go up, they eat into the balance in order to pay the additional costs of providing the same service. Am I understanding that right?
If I'm understanding your question, Representative Nolan, Madam Chair, yes, you are. And the general rule of thumb, and Helen is going to have apoplexy if I'm not saying this right, is to have about a $200,000 ending fund balance, just as good budget management practice.
You may join me.
For this program, Helen asked me to add. And if you have lots more questions about this kind of thing, I'm going to bring Helen to the table because this is her area of expertise, not mine. I do program stuff more.
Helen, did you have anything that you wanted to add to Representative Nolan's comments?
Thank you, Chairman. For the record, my name is Helen Lottridge. I'm the Administrator of the Management Services Division at DEQ. Chair Morgan and Representative Nolan, I have very little to add, actually. We do like to keep about a $200,000 ending balance in this program for cash flow reasons. I would also like to point out that during the course of the biennium, as Director Halleck pointed out, we did spend some extra money in the summer because that's the busy season. And so while we had these positions vacant, we were spending some of that money because of the demand, the seasonal demand of the work. And then we held off filling the positions a little longer because this program actually has quite a bit of fluctuation from season to season, and it's 100% funded by the revenue, so we have to be pretty conservative to make sure that we don't overspend the revenue.
Nope, I'm done.
I'm kind of confused by this, and I remember very well the discussions that took place in the subcommittee in the last biennium around the fees for this. And I remember very clearly the agency committing to raising fees to cover an approximate five-year time frame. And I would assume that the agency is very well aware of the fact that the personnel contracts between the state and the state's employees are negotiated on a fairly regular schedule, and that also there are cost of living increases and roll-ups that are built into that, and it doesn't come as something that's an unexpected increase. And so I'm curious about your explanation that you didn't anticipate the amount of money that was going to be required to cover those costs over the 5 years, and that you didn't put any money into the figuring of it, and I have a problem, you know, with that. I also think that there is an issue of trust here, that when the agency brought the fee schedule to the committee, it was presented to us very clearly as the fees that were going to be implemented. And there wasn't any discussion that I can recall around the need to modify the fee structure or anything like that. It was, as I recall, quite a straightforward discussion about where the fees were going to be set. We also had a very detailed discussion about the services that were going to result from the fee increases being implemented. And I don't know that I so much have a question about the issues that relating to what was presented to the committee and what the fees actually ended up being. I think that there most decidedly is an issue of trust here, and that the one of the problems that we're constantly faced with in the ways and means side of things is how do we get to the bottom of an issue? How do we get to the point where we've got a deal? And how do we know that the deal that we make is going to be seen through? And this is one of those situations, I think, where the problem comes up again, that, there appears to have been some planning that some unanticipated expenses that arose that weren't considered in the process that you went into to bring this original set of numbers to the subcommittee. And I can understand that. And, you've given us the timeline that you went through with the commission and the program that you went through to bring the fees from the list that you presented in the last biennium to the level where they were actually implemented. But the question, I think, still is to be answered about the trust that's been destroyed by the agency with the members of this committee and with this side of the process. And that, to me, is the truly troubling issue here. I don't think that there should ever be anything in a process that precludes late-coming information from being brought to the table and a discussion being engendered. But I don't know that that really happened here. I think, we were apparently sent some kind of a letter, and I don't remember seeing it, but that doesn't mean I didn't see it, that told us the result of this process and that the fees were raised to a certain level. But there was, in my estimation, not a lot of energy put into bringing the legislative branch into the loop that this was all unfolding. And I do have a real problem with that. I would be real interested in having you take us through the list of services that the agency was going to increase in exchange for the increase in fees, and talk to us about where you are in implementing that and how successful that you've been. And I'd like you to take us through that now.
I would be happy to do that, Madam Chair. And I think that one of the attachments that Ken gave you is, if I'm correct, a progress report.
Madam Chair, the members, on the back of the attachment that was clipped together with the table on the front, there's a progress report that the agency supplied. It says progress report May 2001 on the top. On-site sewage disposal program at DEQ. I think this is what Ms. Alec will be referring to.
So, Madam Chair, I'd be happy to do that. At some point, I would like to respond to your first comment about trust.
Please take the opportunity.
And I guess I would respond to it in two ways. The first is that as the current director of the DEQ, it is very important to me personally to have that relationship with the legislature. And if there's an issue and we need to fix it, I want to do whatever we need to do to fix it, and I welcome your suggestions in that regard. Secondly, with respect to this particular chain of events, I think probably part of what's related to it is the changes at DEQ. quite frankly. I was here last session with a fellow by the name of Dennis Illingworth, who was my staff person working on it with me. And we did a lot of work, and we made a presentation to you. And when we were done with our piece of it, I went back to Eastern Region, and he went back to on-site, and events unfolded that I was involved in peripherally, and others became involved in dialogues with LFO, and I believe I had one phone conversation with Ken. Decisions were being made by a different director and a different deputy, and I certainly wouldn't presume to speak for them or know what kind of communication they had. So what appears to me to have happened during that period of time is the communication did not go the way I would hope that it would go in the future, and I would certainly hope to make sure that it does go well under my leadership. Perhaps I could have done more, and I certainly don't want to say that I couldn't have it. At some point in that process, I went to the governor's office, and I was being consulted from time to time by staff on this issue by phone prior to the rules going to the Environmental Quality Commission in November, and they asked me to go to the commission with those rules because I was most familiar with the issue, although I had been apart from it for a bit. So I don't know what could have been done better, quite honestly, but I certainly wish that other things had been done because obviously it didn't turn out very well from the perspective of this body. And I would welcome working with you on how to make sure that that kind of miscommunication doesn't happen again or working with legislative fiscal. But I'm a straight shooter, and if we got a problem, we're going to fix it. And I don't like to have people think that I don't have integrity or think that I lie to them, because I don't. And I will do whatever I need to do to make sure that that gets fixed. And then I'd be happy to go over the services with you.
Let's Madam Chair, yeah.
Representative Krupp.
Thank you. I appreciate your being up front. That's very good to hear, frankly. Let's talk about the service. The fee increase was for increased services, increased personnel to accomplish those services. But yet the people haven't been hired. So we've got the money coming in. How have we increased service from the spring of 2000? We're now in the spring of 2001, so a year later. And I understand, Helen, your thought about, you know, there's a peak demand cycle, and so walk us through that. I mean, we have a fee increase for the purposes of increasing service. Have we increased the service? We certainly increased the fees, but we haven't hired the people. So how did we increase the service?
Madam Chair, Representative Krupp, the short answer, and then I will walk you through the specific service improvement list that we committed to, but the short answer is that we have increased the service in the program areas where we did, in fact, put the staff, Warrenton, Baker City, Grants Pass, and then there's some specifics, and we have not in the areas where we did not fill those positions.
Fair enough.
So there is the progress report in your packet that is in a slightly different order than the original list. There was a memo in June of 1999 from me to the members of the Natural Resources Subcommittee of Ways and Means at that time that had a list of items that we committed to. And I'll try and go through these on the same order that you have them on your list. The first was the 5-week turnaround for site evaluations, permits, et cetera. We have achieved that. We're basically gotten the average response time down. This is for the meat and potatoes kind of work. The average response time is about 15 days. The second item on the list was adding service hours to the small field offices. As I indicated already, that was a priority, and we did that. The third item is processing variances within 30 to 45 days. We had a huge backlog. We have eliminated the VAT backlog, and the processing time is now below 45 days. And that is probably on this whole fee schedule, the fee that I am most concerned about, which ironically is the one that we didn't even really talk about last session, is the one that is at $1,300. If we
if we go back to the way it was before, we're going to go be back in 6 to 9 month backlog and variances in not much time.
Point of just for a personal clarification on the first and the bullet points that aren't specific to areas, did they describe the program statewide?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, they do. And I want to be clear, they also, except if they are specific to our relationship with the counties, they are talking only about the counties in which DEQ provides the direct service. So these service improvements were for us as an agency. They don't relate to the counties, the programs where the counties run the program. Better service estimates, that actually was not on my initial list of commitments that I had made, but we have developed some tracking mechanisms for response times that so that we can more accurately predict for an applicant how long it'll take for DEQ to respond to an application. Providing more oversight of county programs and working with more counties to take the program. Trying to find it on my list because I've got my list written in different order. Well, I know it's here because I saw it this morning. Well, I'm going to skip it and not take your time. I'll come back to it. Make rules which identify situations in which fees can be refunded. We have done that. Those rules are in place. Make rules to relate annual compliance fees paid for holding tanks to self-certification. That's actually the first item on your agenda that Mr. Rocco handed out for today. It wasn't really directly connected to what we discussed about fees last session, but it was a service improvement that we committed to. Review all paper processes for opportunities to eliminate, reduce, and or utilize electronic transfer. We have done some review of that. There is more to do. We are developing some pilots for electronic transfer of applications and figuring out how to do some scanning of documents. We could actually send them out. If we've got one office that's overloaded, we could send them out to another office so they could process them more quickly. So we have done some work on that. Extend term of pumper installer licenses to more than 1 year in order to reduce paperwork. Those are the rules. There is a set of rules. This is one of the items that has not occurred as quickly as we would hope. We have rules going forward. I think they would be adopted in the beginning of 2002, and those would be included in that rule package, that particular item. Develop a training and certification program in conjunction with community colleges and other interested parties, so that pumpers and installers can deliver more services to homeowners in lieu of DEQ in the counties. That, I mentioned earlier, is the program that has also not come online as quickly as we had hoped, and that Office Specialist 2 that is currently being recruited for was going to work in processing paperwork in that program, but first the program has to be developed. it is in process. There is dialogue and work groups jointly with the county on all of these things. The next item was email linkage with the counties. We have sent that up. Conduct more training sessions and information exchange meetings between DEQ counties and the on-site industry. We have reinstituted the on-site annual meeting, and we've had two of those, and they're very popular, and we're planning on continuing to do that. Last year, we also were able to do 5 soils workshops, and those are also very well received. We'd like to do more. We were hoping maybe to have some quarterly meetings. We have not done that yet. Increase the amount of bond that pumpers and installers must carry to ensure that the homeowners are protected. That's also in the rules that are scheduled to be adopted in early 2002.
increasing enforcement against the Maverick pumpers installers. This is the Representative Krupp, the area where we have done least, because that's where those vacant NRS4s, that's the work that they would do, basically. Make rules which streamline the process for approving new technologies. We've actually had, this is my favorite topic, we have had two rulemakings on this subject to deal with some issues with particular industries. I've had discussions with Senator Farioli and Senator Messerly about, quite frankly, the need to get DEQ out of this business of approving new technologies. And I would love it if there was a way to do that so we could bring a bill to the next session to get us out of this business. But absent that, we've adopted some rules, and we are struggling to try and make it be a program that works for folks.
Madam Chair.
Representative Krupp.
Thank you. That's another reassuring point that you've made, Director. Who would you propose do it if you don't do it? Who would approve those systems?
Madam Chair, Representative Krupp, therein lies the dilemma. There is no national body. There's nobody. Every state, as I understand from the people in the industry, is wrestling with this. We are told, although not everyone obviously agrees, but we are told by some that we have the best set of rules in the nation on how to do it. I personally think that we need to do a little bit more work on the rules. I think they're pretty tight for some new businesses, but they're better than they were, and we're learning as we go. This isn't what we do. And there really needs to be, and I don't know if the state would want to step up to the plate and actually set up a body that could do it. There's some professional associations in the state. There's a Sanitarians Registration Board. There's a group called O2WA that has industry people on it. But I really don't know. That would be the task to figure out in the interim.
All right. Thank you.
I did find the other one about county oversight on here. I knew it was on here. We have done a couple. We've worked... The purpose of this action item was to help more counties keep the program if they're now running it, or take it on if they're not running it. We worked with Curry County and Klamath County so they could keep the program. They were at risk of giving it back to the state, and we have done some stuff with them, and I could get the specifics for you. I don't have them today, to help them keep the program. We've done one county audit, and I think we have two in the works, just to be sure that they're doing their processes and assessing their fees and everything in accordance with statute. So we're doing a little bit more, but there is more to do there. And then the final item on here actually refers to what we commonly refer to as the Lapine Project, and you actually saw a slide presentation on that project from the gal, Barbara Rich, who came over from Bend and showed you the systems that are being put in place over there. So that project is ongoing, and it's not really related to the fee discussion, other than the fact that that project is funding half of the soil scientists that we have on staff. And that's it, Madam Chair.
If I might ask a question, too, you've had the efficiencies in place now for basically a one-year cycle, in probably stepping them in various increments. What's adding the people going to add to to your ability to increase? I guess what I'm curious about is you've run the program now for a year and made a lot of efficiencies to it, and on paper it appears that some of the changes that you've made have had a big impact in your ability to process. So the question that I'm trying to get out here is what will adding the unfilled positions to the process bring to the process?
Madam Chair, and as I responded to Representative Krupp as well, it primarily will be in the compliance area. The fees that the pumpers and installers were paying to have more compliance against the Mavericks, those are the positions that have remained unfilled. And if those positions are filled, then more of that work will be done than is being done now. That's the primary one.
Further questions or comments?
Senator Dukes?
The any more questions to ask the staff before I close the public hearing and go to work session? Senator Dukes.
Whatever we do, I'd like to hang on to the position in Warrenton.
To hang on to what?
The position in Warrenton. Everybody may remember all those little duck shacks and houseboats and things we talked about when we had DSLs. These people have a have a piece of that.
What's having their somebody, role in that?
Where the sewage goes and how it goes and what happens to it on its way.
Okay.
So, because they sit on a body of water and something has to happen to it.
I am then going to close the public hearing and open a work session on Senate Bill 5516. We have LFO's recommendation. Can you take us through that again, just real quickly?
Yes, Madam Chair. The LFO's recommendation is to look at, if you'd look at the dash 2 amendment, conceptual amendments, which fiscal impact, which has attached to it a hand engrossed bill with the changes that have been discussed. I'd like to also add that legislative fiscal has is not implying that the agency did anything to try to hoodwink the legislature at all. I think this is the reason that Senate Bill 333 was passed in 1995 by the legislature, was to provide this kind of oversight over the fee adoption processes that agencies engage in when they're not in front of the legislative body. And I think this is the reason why we're bringing this forward. I think it also points out a need for agencies to ask for what is needed in a package. If positions were not needed, if there was some doubt about that, I think that discussion should have been had at the time. And I think it also points out the need to be very careful about fee increases and clarifying whether it's a total revenue that's going to be generated by a fee increase, whether it's an across-the-board percentage increase of all fees, or whether there are specific fees in mind when the agency's asking for authority to increase fees. And with that, I think the proposal is to roll the fees back to what was presented to the 99 legislature. If you look at the table in included at the back of the LFO's memo, it has the existing fees prior to the increase, estimated fees presented to the 99 session, and the actual fee implemented. The proposal would be to any fee that was increased above the amount discussed in front of the legislature would be reduced back to that level that was discussed. I think Ms. Halleck has pointed out a valid point on the variances, where that particular fee was, it's shown down at the near the bottom of the table. It was $225 because it was in statute as a cap. When Senate Bill 335 was passed in the 99 legislative session, that cap was removed and they were given authority to increase the fee to cover costs. So I think in that case, LFO would recommend amending the recommendation to include that $1,300 fee, which was set through rulemaking and had really not been discussed previously with the legislative body.
Comments and questions? Representative Nolan.
Madam Chair, Mr. Rocco, what's the cumulative impact on revenues of LFO's proposal, and what's your proposed effective date?
Madam Chair, Representative Nolan, the impact you can see on the fiscal impact form, which is under the dash 2 conceptual amendments, has a revenue reduction of estimated $368,000 for the 0103 biennium, which would result in eliminating three positions, which could be the vacant positions that they currently have.
Representative Hansen.
Do we have any guess on what the impact of the variance increase that you just mentioned?
Representative Hansen, if you look, I'm sorry to keep shifting papers on you, but if you look at the other table that is similar to the one you were just looking at, but it has the DEQ symbol in the corner, if you go down to that variance line, you can see in activity between February and January of 2001, there were two cases, and they're projecting a total of 15 during the 2001-03 biennium. So that would result in a net increase of approximately $19,500 in revenue.
Representative Lowe, you're looking like you were wanting to ask a question.
I wanted to make a comment, if I might, please.
Yes.
Thank you. I agree that I have a newfound respect for sitting on Ways and Means subcommittees and learning that it's good to have information upon which you can rely when you try to set a budget and set policy. And from biennium to biennium, I certainly would echo your sentiments that we need to be able to encourage agencies to give us accurate information to the best of their abilities so that we know what we're doing. On the other hand, in my district, I've heard many complaints from industry and from citizens about how difficult it is to wait all the period of time required to get DEQ to do what they need to do. And I'm reluctant to hamstring them in terms of staffing that would cause further delays for services that are critically needed to folks. So I'm a little uncomfortable about the recommendation, to be perfectly honest with you, Madam Chair.
Further comments?
Madam Chair.
Representative Hayden.
Madam Chair, Mr. Rocco, concerning the variance, can you tell me what a variance is? I presume I know, but...
Madam Chair, Representative Hayden, I would, being a budget analyst, I would hate to get into variances, but I'm sure the agency would be.
Madam Chair, Representative Hayden, a variance is when you have a particular piece of property where they're having trouble siting a system. And the agency goes through extra effort to do site evaluation and try and figure out a variance from some of the requirements so the folks can actually get a system sited. And generally, it takes more time to do that because these are difficult situations to resolve. Sometimes they're on the coast, as Senator Dukes knows, because there's some, or they can be an odd shaped size of property or a property that's too small for a standard drain field, something like that.
Thank you. Well, Mr. Rocco, on your dash two amendments, page 4, you have reversed the $1,300 charge to $225, and on your dash one amendments, page 4, you have left the $1,300. And what are the recommendations about that?
Madam Chair, Representative Hayden, this is what I was referring to as based on the comments that Ms. Halleck made today. I would suggest if you were going to adopt the dash two amendments, that you would reverse that and eliminate take the $225 out and leave it at the $1,300 level, based on the information that was received regarding the change that was made in statute last time to remove the cap on that fee, and the fact that it wasn't really a part of the discussion brought before the Ways and Means Committee last session.
Well, Madam Chair, unaccustomed as I am to supporting what appear to be extravagant fee increases, Still, I am appreciative of the fact that people want a home to live on, and if a lot can be made buildable by paying $1,300 in variance fees, I'm sure that these 15 families would be very happy to pay that. As a matter of fact, members of my family have spent thousands and thousands of dollars in soil experts and analysis and cubic feet and volumes and quality of timber and so on to try and get these permits. So if we can do it for $1,300, I think I'd have to approve that.
Well, I'm not clear either whether the paying the fee here gets you the variance or allows you to enter into the process to try to get one.
Okay, I don't know. The other side of that coin, Madam Chair, is that we've discussed the five vacant positions, three of which have something's happened to those, leaving two vacant positions. There's probably enough money here in the two vacant positions to fund the fees for the variance if you want to approach it from
well,
that.
Well, and I don't have a problem accepting LFO's revised recommendation to allow the fee that was increased to stand, which would give almost another $20,000 to the agency. Representative Nolan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My comment would follow, I think, somewhat along the lines of Representative Hayden's comment, and would also echo sentiments we heard during the public testimony on DEQ's overall budget, where I understand that this particular fee schedule is mostly related to residential construction, although I suspect some of these systems also support commercial facilities, but it's mostly geared at residential. The testimony we heard during our review of the overall DEQ budget came from two representatives from industry point of view who talked with us about the cost of delay. And as Representative Hayden has pointed out, in many instances, and I would submit that in most of these instances, the fees themselves, although not welcomed by anyone who has to write the check out, pay for a service. And the cost of delaying that service when you're building a new house or building an addition on a house or building an outbuilding on a property or some other thing, and you're paying a construction loan, 2 or 3 days worth of interest on that construction loan will far exceed anything we would help them save by rolling back a fee from $450 to $425. And although nobody likes to pay a higher fee than is absolutely necessary, I wouldn't be surprised but that many of the people who pay these fees would think it's a bargain if it saves them those few days or a few weeks. So I am also reluctant to support rolling these back, given that the department has come to us with a plan for how they want to increase service and be more responsive to the customers that they serve and that we're accountable to.
Point of personal privilege, Madam Chair. My exception was exclusively that $1,300. I support LFO recommendation to roll back the rest of the fees.
I didn't hear what
you said. To roll back the rest of the fees to the agreed upon.
With the exception of the variance fee?
Yes.
Okay. Are you making a motion?
No, ma'am.
Representative Hansen.
I'm not making a motion either, but kind of my vision of the world is that if consistency is real important in terms of fee structures, my preference would be not to roll the fees back, keep them where they are. We approve every position and we approve every dollar that they spend. And that's where we should be really concentrating our legislative oversight. If the fees are excessive at this point, if we're carefully managing the positions that are filled, all we're doing is increasing the ending balance, which delays on into the future the next time the fees have to be increased. So rather than having the fees come down and then at some point in the future they're going to go back up, we maintain more consistency and we keep the fees stable for a longer period of time. And then at the same time put the scrutiny on the positions and the level of service that we're creating. So I don't know what other than if it's perceived that it was bad faith of the agency that increased the fees to this level as a way to get their attention or something to take them back down. But I don't know whether that means that since these are fees that have been set by the agency, whether they have to go through a fee setting activity to bring them back down to meet the legislative intent. But at very least, they're going to have to republicize, change forms, do a lot of activity to bring them down. So I can't support the LFO's recommendation on this. On the other hand, I am comfortable that there are lots of ways that we can increase communication in the future to keep this type of thing from happening again. In some level of sympathy to the agency, there's the faith that you have to keep with the legislature. There's also a faith that you have to keep with the constituents that you've raised the fees on. So it's constant balancing of how can we provide the service that we're promising for the increases in rates, and then we've also got the complication that comes in terms of legislative session lasting longer and taking a longer period to implement these. But I think I'd come down in terms of stabilization of the fees and then keeping the real discussion on the positions and what the level of service is on the positions. And with an expectation, if more revenue is being generated than needed, we would expect to see higher ending balances, and that we would expect maybe even to extend the five-year period or the two bienniums into maybe a third biennium or anyway, stretch it out. But I don't know what we get by going through another round of fee setting.
Mr. Rocco, what are we talking about here in rolling the fees back? Are we talking about refunding money to people? Are we just talking about stopping at a certain point collecting the higher fees?
Madam Chair, I believe that there would not be any mechanism for refunding. It would just be that as of July 1, these fees would go back to the previous level, or the level that the bill would set by being amended.
Okay, we are running out of time here, so I'm going to kind of cut to the chase and ask for a motion to accept.
I will give you that motion.
We need to come up with this good senator.
I'll try. Madam Chair, while you're there, I want to make a comment, if it's all right. I'm listening to all this go on. Thought crossed my mind about all of our regulatory agencies. They are the ones that continue to pass administrative rules along with this body that require more laws and bureaucracy, and then they want people to staff to support the bureaucracy that's been created. And there's no end to that.
Madam Chair.
Representative Krupp.
Just a quick question on the variance fee, rolling it back to $225 from $1,300. Was it, that implies to me that the fee previously was $225 and that we've increased it in a relatively short period of time up to the $1,300 level. That's a pretty massive increase over what, in just a year, 2 years?
Well,
we didn't discuss that.
And my understanding is that the increase that, or the fee that was set that relates to variances was handled outside of the process for the rest of these fees, and it was actually part of a whole separate bill that was considered in the last legislative session. Stephanie, could you come up and kind of outline that? Because it, I do believe it also is in this list in error and shouldn't be included in this list.
Madam Chair, Representative Krupp, first of all, with regard to your point about the increase, it is a substantial increase, and the reason for that is the fee was set in statute at $225 years ago, and in no way reflects the true cost of doing variance, actual processing of variance requests and all that. And so because it was in statute, Senate Bill 335 that I referred to took it out of statute and gave the department authority to set it by rule. And it was set by rule to reflect the true cost of doing the work, which is about 13.5 hours for a standard variance.
Okay, thank you very much.
Representative Lowe.
Madam Chair, I'm moved by this discussion and frankly torn a little bit. But, and I'm just wondering that, you know, in terms of what we need to do, the argument for consistency in fee structures, at least, you know, for the service providers and to have some hope for the consumers of timely service.
Come down again.
I find to be compelling, and I'm just wondering if some of the issues raised by Representative Hansen couldn't be addressed during the interim, if we could require, you know, like maybe unschedule a portion of the funding for some positions, give them 1 year, and then require an interim report back to this committee before the rest of the funds are unscheduled, so that we can make sure that they're meeting the needs of the consumers in a timely and efficient way. To me, that would be a win-win for the consumers. Has that been considered as part of the process, or is that a possibility?
The recommendation and the motion that we now have before the committee is to accept the Dash 2 conceptual amendments that have been amended to take the variance fee out of the recommendation.
So moved, Madam Chair.
And that's what I would like to have the discussion center around. Senator Hannan is on his way down right now. It'll take him about 5 minutes to get here. But I would like to just have some discussion on that motion.
Well, Madam Chair, the motion is to approve the Dash 2 conceptual amendments as presented by LFO with the exclusion of line 42, number L.
Correct.
Which is not a part of this discussion.
Representative Hansen.
Madam Chair, this is my second year participating in the Ways and Means process. I've been rolled before on a lot of issues. So I've got a meeting that's going on in my office, and you don't need me for a no vote on the.
Are you asking to be rolled, Representative?
Well, I have no doubt in terms of what's coming.
Well, hold on a second, because we also have an option here of carrying this work session over to tomorrow at 1 o'clock and finishing the discussion at that time. And given the fact that we're over the end of our time, and I'm sure that everyone has things to do, I would think that that's probably the most expedient course for us to take right now.
Madam Chair, does the motion remain on the table?
And I don't remember it tomorrow.
I think it does.
I can guarantee you that. I just wanted to know what the agency was going to do in response.
But you can always put it
if
back,
we
Cedric.
Reduce the fees. I mean, I'd like to know what to expect when I go home with lower fees.
All the more reason, Madam Chair.
Stephanie, are you prepared to answer that?
And maybe tomorrow she could answer it. As long as I've asked it, I don't have to remember it tomorrow.
Tomorrow would give us all a little chance to think through this.
Yes.
Do we have a scheduling problem with 24 hours?
No, not for a
Madam Chair, Representative Hansen, if the chair announces that it will be carried over, there's no 24-hour notice requirement.
Can you leave a motion hanging?
I don't think we can.
I don't know.
Would you be so kind as to withdraw your motion just to clean this up, and we will reintroduce it tomorrow?
At your pleasure, Madam Chair, I withdraw my motion.
The motion is withdrawn. Do we adjourn or recess?
If we recess, I don't have to withdraw my motion.
Oh, that's true.
This is recess. We do want to make sure we don't have the 24-hour notice issue.
I think you recess the hearing or the work session and adjourn the meeting.
Oh, we're going to get some official.
It's my understanding that you recess to a time certain.
We're doing this housekeeping stuff.
Okay. That would work.
Madam Chair, you recess to a time certain, is my understanding.
Okay, we'll wait till Mr. Rocco comes back with the. But that sounds good to me.
Lawyerly.
Okay.
This was interesting.
Yep.
Nothing.
You're earning
is
your
easy.
Keep today.
Am I? Are we still on camera?
I don't think we need to maintain everybody being here either if you have to go somewhere else.
I got a meeting going on.
Yes, I have a meeting, but I want to know the time, sir.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Indeed.
It's time to find my office.
What night?
No, we're not going to the session today.
It's time to find my office.
Well, it's tomorrow, I think.
We got most of today's agenda done.
Yeah. Yeah,
are we still going?
Yes.
Madam Chair, members, the interpretation is that if an announcement is made by the chair that the work session will be carried over to all interested parties in the room that hear that, that there is not a need to have 24-hour notice. We will post it immediately after the meeting, and the committee can be adjourned and start up again tomorrow.
Okay, we will continue this work session over to 1 o'clock tomorrow, and assuming that everyone is fully informed of that, I will adjourn the meeting.